It's been a quiet week in Barcelona, my hometown, out here on the Mediterranean coast. I've drunk some coffee, eaten some protein, and gone to jiu-jitsu and gotten plenty of new bruises. In other words, just more of the usual thing. As always, I've also been thinking some of my famous random thoughts about Spain and about the world and about life. So here's another episode of Random Thoughts with Mr. Chorizo. Hey everybody, it's Daniel, and welcome back to another episode of Spain to Go. Sorry, I was just doing an impression of Garrison Keillor. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, my parents were always listening to his show. It was called A Prairie Home Companion, and he would very slowly tell stories about a small town in Minnesota at the end of his episodes of A Prairie Home Companion. I don't know. I'm going to try to speak a little bit faster here because I almost went to sleep narrating at that speed. In any case, this is episode 67, and we're going to talk about formal versus informal education. El Caso Coldo, one of Spain's new corruption scandals, and also Women's Day 2024, which is shaping up to possibly be the smallest Women's Day celebration in recent memory. So, with no further ado, let's get to it. Formal versus informal education. I've got a long draft of an article somewhere that I wrote about the education system. Long story short, I think the whole thing is a sham. Formal education has certain benefits for certain people, but it also leaves a lot of people out. And maybe my case is a bit extreme, but I'm pretty certain that 98% of the actually important things I've learned throughout the years have been through informal education. Just for example, everything about starting and running an online business, which is what I do now. In my high school, we literally learned that HTTP stands for Hypertext Transfer Protocol. I'm still waiting for an opportunity to use this knowledge. Maybe this article is it. Our teachers didn't use computers. The internet was barely in its version 1.0 back then. Everything I know about online business, how to make and market products, do SEO, keep track of my cash flow, find, hire, and manage talent to do things I can't, all of that I learned on my own, mostly from books or blogs or podcasts. If I'm being generous, I'll admit that the idea of writing a five-paragraph essay with introduction and thesis statement, support for the thesis, and finally a conclusion probably helped me out as a writer. Other than that, I'd say that what I got from 12 or so years of formal education can be summed up as some Spanish and some basic math. Being able to do simple calculations with two-digit numbers in my head is a valuable life skill, and it's about as useful as my math classes got back on the ranch. For the rest, there are calculators and spreadsheets, which incidentally I figured out how to use on my own. About once every 5 years, something in my life will turn out to be a one-variable algebraic equation I can solve for x. I learned that in sixth grade. Oh yeah, and I learned what a subject, a verb, an object, and a prepositional phrase were. That might have been in sixth or seventh grade as well, and it finally came in handy when I started teaching English. So apart from those few things, was the whole educational experience just a waste of time? For me, it was, apparently. I think it was for plenty of other people, too. We had a whole crowd of stoners and burnouts at my school who didn't seem to be getting much out of the experience at all. What happened to all those kids later? I don't have any idea. The counter-argument here is that maybe what everyone actually needs is more school, or that schools need more funding, but I'm not buying it. There are probably some underfunded schools out there, but mine wasn't one of them. Obligatory public education is, in my opinion, a very expensive, time-consuming system that just doesn't work for large parts of the population. Anyway, I don't have a solution here. I'd just like to mention that maybe if we stopped browbeating kids into thinking their grades in middle school science class are somehow key to their future success in the real world, we might unleash the hidden potential of a lot of people who just don't care about the periodic table and would be better off doing something else with those years of their lives. Moving on. Caso Coldo is a new corruption scandal in Pedro Sanchez's government. The big Spanish news this week is about El Caso Coldo. That is Coldo with a K. It is the last name of somebody involved in this whole thing. I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details, but it appears that the government of the Islas Baleares, that is Mallorca, Menorca, Ibiza, etc., spent a whole lot of money buying defective surgical masks in the first few weeks of the COVID-19 pandemic. Surely you remember that. Later, when they found out they'd been overcharged and the masks weren't up to spec, they started investigating and found that they'd given millions of euros to an anonymous shell company and that the whole thing looked pretty shady. Those involved attempted to cover their tracks, and importantly, those involved include prominent members of Pedro Sanchez's socialist government. The whole thing is an ongoing investigation, but sending 50 million euros to a shell company and then trying to cover it up once there's an investigation hardly sounds like something you'd do if you had nothing to hide. The irony here is that everybody on the left has been pouting for years about Isabel Díaz Ayuso being the wildly popular president of the Madrid community and also a horrible far-right monster or something. I don't know. I've never seen an actual argument against Ayuso. The left is apparently just mad that she exists and is so popular. In fact, the closest thing anyone had to an actual argument was a similar case in which Ayuso's brother received a commission for selling surgical masks to the Madrid government back in 2020. That was investigated from every angle by both the Spanish public prosecutors and those of the European Union, and the result was that the whole thing was perfectly legal, that Ayuso knew nothing about it, and that her brother's commission was valid and reasonable. The Díaz Ayuso family has been involved in selling medical equipment and material for several decades, from what I understand, so it's also not quite the same as a random company with no assets just suddenly billing 50 million for some face masks that they somehow came across, and which were also defective. Anyway, now it's the quote-unquote Socialist Workers' Party who's under the microscope for possible illegal commissions, but on a much larger scale. I'm not at all surprised by any of this. People in the government getting rich while everyone else suffers is a long-standing tradition in most countries. It can happen in any party. Just look at uber-leftist Pablo Iglesias and his million-dollar mansion for more about that. I've got a link on the blog, or it's a, you know, common thing people were talking about several years ago, if you want to Google around. Or, you know, you could read about the Russian Revolution or check out my podcast episode. It was episode 59, it looks like. Anyway, these corruption scandals often drag on for years, or sometimes they just disappear from one day to the next. I usually find such things pretty boring if they end up being years-long scandals. So unless something more interesting happens here, like Pedro Sanchez being forced to resign, for example, I wouldn't expect a lot of updates here on the Spain to Go podcast. By next week, we will most likely have all moved on to something else. Something else like Women's Day 2024. Last year, I wrote a long piece about Women's Day. It was also a podcast. I think it was episode 32. Anyway, Women's Day is March 8th every year. Two things I talked about last year seem worthy of mentioning again. The Ley Trans and the Socialist Party's big announcement about gender-based quotas in government and big business. First up, the famous Ley Trans that, among other things, made it possible to change your bureaucratic sex with a simple process at the civil registry. Bureaucratic sex is what I'm calling it anyway, in the absence of better terminology. You can now change the M on your national ID card to an F, or vice versa, without going through any sort of previous medical or psychological evaluation. All you have to do is ask. I haven't seen a lot of actual information following up here, and I have looked. It's not being heavily reported, except for the fact that bureaucratic sex change applications have jumped more than 400% in the year since the law was passed. That's just over 5,000 people in a year, not a huge number in other words. According to the available data, about 61% of those applying are attempting to change from masculino to femenino. The other 39% presumably are changing from femenino to masculino. The M and F on your Spanish national ID card are the same as they would be presumably on a U.S. ID card, male, female, masculine, feminine, etc. It looks like the transition process might be more difficult than was originally promised, the bureaucratic transition this is that I'm talking about. But again, that's nothing new. Look at the digital nomad visa for another case. It's easy for the government to promise a fast turnaround, and much more difficult for the bureaucrats on the front lines to follow through. If you've been to a Spanish bureaucratic office, you know how slow it can be. And those people, from what I can tell, are often not informed about what the government's big plan is. They find out like everybody else, and it takes a while to figure out how to apply the new laws. So the people making the laws are very far detached from actual application, and things often turn out a little bit differently in practice than they do in the halls of the Senate, let's say. I don't know anything else here about the implications of the ley trans, and I don't ever in my day-to-day life ask people what their bureaucratic sex is. So it seems like the effect of this law might be pretty minimal so far. So, what about the gender quotas in government and big business? Specifically, last year to celebrate Women's Day, the government announced that future electoral lists would give 50% representation to women, and that big businesses would have to put a minimum of 40% women on their boards of directors. Well, funny thing about that. For the longest time, I was interpreting news articles in which the government makes huge declarations as if they were statements of fact, when it often seems that they're merely hopeful intentions for some moment in the distant future. It must be cultural. The newspapers use this future tense. They say, "El gobierno dará 80,000 euros a cada paloma en el parque," for example. And I just stupidly assume that they're actually going to do it. It turns out that in reality, they announce a new policy as soon as someone has the idea, but in fact, a law has to go through various drafts, spend some time in the Congress, move on to the Senate. They need to find space for it in the budget. It goes back to the Congress. And finally, if passed, it may be published in amended form in the official state bulletin, the famous Boletín Oficial del Estado. Nothing is final until then, and so a lot of those hopeful intentions never actually happen. There's something called a anteproyecto de ley, which is the first draft, basically, and then there's the proyecto de ley, which is the second draft, and if you see that a proyecto de ley has been approved, that does not mean that this is law. That just means that now it's going to the Senate or something. It's a long process, and it's a bit confusing. And I suspect I'm not the only person in Spain who's not reading the Boletín Oficial del Estado every day to find out what is actually law and what is not. So, my big prediction last year was that these quotas about how many people of what gender would be forming the government and the boards of directors of big companies could mix with the easy bureaucratic sex change law to create some pretty bizarre consequences. And I stand by that, but I guess we'll have to see both laws in force to know for sure. So I'll leave you with a chant that I heard at a women's march a few years ago here in Barcelona. Con pene o con vagina, mujeres combativas. That's a real chant that I really heard at a Women's Day march, suggesting that having a penis doesn't need to stop one from being a strong, independent woman who fights for her rights. Con pene o con vagina, mujeres combativas. Last year, Women's Day marches, in fact, were separated in two in many Spanish cities, divided over the issue of women with dangly external genitalia. I don't have any opinion about what standard female genitalia is or should be, of course. I'm just a blogger and podcaster, not a biologist. In any case, the controversy seems to have made some people less interested in the whole issue. I'm not seeing as much run-up coverage for Women's Day this year. Today, a Sunday just 5 days before the big event, El País has just one article about the feminist movement on their front page. It's paywalled. El Mundo, ABC, and La Vanguardia, the other top papers in Spain, have none. Maybe they're waiting for Wednesday to publish their best stuff, but it seems a bit strange after the huge PR push that March 8th Women's Day protests have gotten in previous years that most of the articles I can find in Google are about 2023. That's last year. Anyway, I'll let you know if anything exciting happens. I am, as usual, your humble public servant with dangling external genitalia. Reporting from Barcelona, this is Daniel. And that's about all I've got for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to leave me a comment on the blog. If you share my thoughts about formal education or informal education, if you made millions selling masks to the government during the pandemic, if you have strong feelings one way or another about Women's Day, please swing by expatmadrid.com, leave a comment on the article, or send me a message. I'm happy to hear from you as always. You can donate to the cause here. I used to say you could buy me a vermouth on my donation page, but these days I am Mr. Sobriety. So you can buy me a coffee or, I don't know, a bottle of sparkling water on the donations page. Head to expatmadrid.com/donate. You can donate €3, you can donate €300, whatever you have and are willing to donate to the cause of local reporting from Spain is fine with me. I appreciate every bit. While you're there on expatmadrid.com/donate, you can attach a message to your donation. Let me know what you want to hear about here on the podcast. I'm coming up on episode 70, and, you know, 70 is 70% of the way to 100, so doing big things over here. I am on Amazon. If you are listening to this, you probably don't need to learn English from me, but maybe you have friends who could benefit from some English language education, informally, of course. Go to Amazon, put in my name, Daniel Welsh, and you will find that I've got about a dozen books that will help Spanish people speak English. You could also go to YouTube and look for Learn Spanish with Daniel. Over there, I'm teaching Spanish to English speakers. You know, I have a range of talents from YouTubing to podcasting and back to YouTubing, I guess. You could follow me on Instagram, just look for my name. I don't publish too much on there, but I do occasionally publish things. I publish a lot of stories, actually, when I'm walking around. Other than that, I appreciate you listening to this podcast. If you could go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and leave a review, that would really make my day. As many stars as you can give me, you know, the more the better is my philosophy on stars there. Apple Podcasts will actually let you leave a review. Spotify will just let you leave some stars. Stars are fine if you don't feel like writing anything, but I appreciate any sort of feedback. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, hasta la próxima. Bye.